Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Today was ridiculous, to put it simply. It was the Warriors' home opener, preseason home opener, against the LA Clippers, and they blew them out of the water. The final score was 45-point margin, 120-75. It wasn't even that close. It was pretty insane. And to talk about it is my friend Adam Lauridsen, who runs the Warriors Fast Break blog. It's part of the San Jose Mercury News. And we were originally going to talk for 15 to 20 minutes. That was kind of the guideline. We ended up doing more than half an hour because we had a lot of stuff we wanted to talk about with this game. So I hope you enjoy it. It was surreal to see in person. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
I don't know whether to say that there's a lot to go through or whether it just felt like there was a lot in that game.
I think that the build-up for this game, for the first time that the Warriors looked truly dominant and otherworldly, made it seem far more significant than it probably should be. You know, I don't think I've ever heard a preseason crowd anywhere cheer as loudly as they did on that first Durant three to open the game. So there was a lot of expectation, a lot of frustration that, you know, Warriors fans were cutting loose after the way that the last season ended. So I think that for a preseason game, we're bound to blow this one out of proportion, so we might as well just enjoy it and get along with it while we're at it.
Yeah, and it felt different the whole time, and I think part of that is because it was Steph Curry bobblehead night, and so fans were there early. So that meant that there were big cheers when they came out for warm-ups. There were big cheers when they came out to start the game. The intros were close, not the same volume as like the best Oracle crowds, but like a bad Oracle crowd in the regular season. It's probably like that. And during the game, they were boisterous. I mean, at the beginning, it was excitement, and then it turned into the term I've used before, is it's like an Oracle roast, when part of the enjoyment that the fans have is just making fun of the other team.
Yeah, the humiliation of Austin Rivers and of Doc Rivers' team as a whole, watching Blake fall apart, watching Paul look like an old man. There were just so many different themes that hit all the buttons for Warriors fans. So independent of the idea that we're getting to see the super team sort of putting on its cape and flying through the air, just beating up on the Clippers in its own right is cause for celebration. So yeah, there was a lot going on for a preseason game.
Yeah, and the animosity between these two teams historically is something worth noting. And also the fact that the Warriors played on Saturday and didn't look nearly this good was in the back of my mind, because, you know, you're kind of sitting there going, oh, you know, they're going to go through growing pains. That's what you expect. And they still will. Like, this is not, oh, they figured it all out, everything, all systems engage, or anything crazy like that. But to see it go from stumbling a little bit, which you'd expect, to whatever the heck that first quarter and first half was jarring, to say the least.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And we saw, I think, at least two things that I expect to hold true throughout the season. And they're not going to win every game by 45 points. They're not going to double up everybody's score. But, you know, I expect these to be themes. Number one, when Curry, Durant, or Thompson gets the ball, defenses just instinctively flock towards whoever has the ball, and the Warriors are already getting so good at reading where the open man is and hitting that person. There were times tonight where Curry looked almost flustered that he was so open and out of rhythm that he was so open. Thompson didn't have that problem. It's why he shot 10 for 14 and 6 for 9 for 3. So, you know, he's just thriving on that. So the inability of defenses to stretch to cover everybody is something that we all predicted would happen, and I think we saw a good taste of it tonight. But the other thing I think that we're going to see that is a change from last year, the depth and the way that Steve Kerr can throw waves of players out there really changes with a third score, a third reliable score in Kevin Durant. And it just felt like moments tonight where Durant had been on the bench or Thompson had been on the bench, and one of them would check back in with largely a reserve crew, And those would have been the moments last season where you would worry about sort of a slump where the offense would struggle for a bit. And it was just seamless and relentless tonight through the first half when Kerr was going with mostly his starters and rotation players. There's always going to be an elite scorer out on the floor for the Warriors in almost every conceivable circumstance. And the ability to just pummel teams with that type of lineup is something that we saw tonight and that I expect to continue on through the season.
Yeah, something that struck me during the game was that earlier in the day I was reading John Schumann's, he does this one team, one stat thing, and I was one day behind, so his stat yesterday on the Raptors was talking about how their starting lineup struggled a little bit, but part of the reason they did so well last year was that their second units were really, really good. And there are a couple different ways to quantify that, but a big part of what Toronto did was that they staggered Kyle Lowry and DeRozan for logical reasons, similar to why I've argued for Durant and Curry to stagger. And part of it is that they created this system where the other team didn't really get any minutes off. And that's what I think we saw from the Warriors in this game, was the idea that you talked about it in waves, which is a great way of thinking about it. And for those of us who are video game nerds, it's kind of like that idea of when you've had a level that's a real pain and then you realize you're not done yet. And that's really what facing this team is going to be at points. But the biggest takeaway for me is something that we all knew, you and I talked about this, I think, over the summer, not on a recording, but it was the idea that there are going to be so many open looks for this team due to the attention that the best players justifiably earn. Like in this game, you talked about Curry got really open. There were a few plays where Draymond was just kind of sitting there figuring out what he wanted to do with the ball. And the other player who was maybe most interesting intellectually was Zaza Pachulia. Pachulia was open all the time, and you don't usually think of a center usually in the paint as being open all the time, but it absolutely happened.
Yeah, Pachulia and West, when he was playing some of his center minutes, it looks right now like West can just sit at the elbow and get open jump shots all game if he wants them. The Warriors may be able to get some better shots, and West may not always be the most reliable person for that, but it's a pretty high percentage look, and it just came so effortlessly. I mean, West put up 6 shots in 16 minutes, playing mostly with rotation players in the first half. Those opportunities up and down the roster are really going to be tough for other teams to handle. And the Warriors have capable players who I think are going to grow into those roles and find really comfortable positions within the flow of the offense.
And it does change the way you conceive of the rotation players and all of that you want with the stagger, because it could elevate the value of somebody like Ian Clark. In certain circumstances, you could kind of use him in the Klay Thompson role, and he's certainly not as good at it as Klay is, but if he can be offensively 75% of what Klay is, that is hard for a defense too, because if all you have to do is hit open shots, that's something Ian Clark did all of his college career, it's something he can do in the pros as well. And that kind of a stagger, depending on how they want to do it with Klay and Durant, you're going to be creating looks for those guys. And I was thinking about it to a degree, and while he played reasonably well in this game, that it might not be super conducive for Sean Livingston, because the looks that they can concede to him are not necessarily the ones in his range, though he can take a couple steps in and create with the ball in his hands.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think Livingston is the player who probably benefits the least from that. Iguodala to some extent too, although he'll get those open threes that he can hit. Where I think both of those players benefit, and someone like McCaw and Clark also benefit to some degree, once the Warriors introduce movement into this offense, I mean, they're not even close to that yet. They've only been practicing for a week. They're going to be great looks, cutting backdoor, you know, running various action around the corners to get those guys wide open looks, because the defense is going to be so panicked about what's happening on the strong side. I think they're going to find other ways to score, and Kerr and his coaching staff are clearly smart enough and are going to run a disciplined offense to get those guys good looks. So I think they're only scratching the surface. What we saw tonight was just done on innate ability and the familiarity that comes from practicing together for a week, being on Olympic squad, maybe together. But there's no real offense in place yet, and it's only going to get more interesting as they move towards that.
Yeah, and there are a couple things that made me think of. One of them is a challenge that teams are going to have to deal with whenever the Warriors go small, or even have a capable guy who can shoot at the five spot. With David West, I would say, counts in certain circumstances, is that part of the reason a five-out system works is that there isn't really a good place for teams to put their center. And at moments in this game, DeAndre Jordan, who is one of the most capable centers in the entire league, who is a true center at handling that sort of system, was kind of flummoxed and flustered as to really where he was supposed to be. He got one-on-one with Curry a couple times, with Draymond a couple times. At the three-point line, you're just kind of sitting there going, okay, so you have that, and usually the player can take advantage of some sort of seam there. But also, almost every team in the NBA only really has one rim protector. And so if you can move the ball faster than that guy can get back into the paint, you're going to create looks that don't really have a contest. And there were a couple where Blake was there, but just doesn't really matter. You know, Blake Griffin isn't that guy, for better or for worse. And so they're going to get those kinds of looks a lot as well as a spillover. And as you talked about with movement, that will help it even more.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And the mismatches that they're going to be able to create are just going to give teams nightmares. The one example from tonight, in addition to Jordan, which is exactly right, Spates, there was a sort of typical rotation where Spates was in as the reserve big for the Clippers, and Kerr went back to Durant, and they ended up matched up on each other just in the natural flow of the game. And it's just a bloodbath like we would have expected. There was no way that Spates could stay with Durant, and he was totally overmatched. And those are the types of situations that every team is going to confront. You know, what happens when I have to deal with a Durant and a Klay Thompson and a Curry playing against my second unit guys? How do I handle that?
And there are enough guys on this group that you can't really alter your rotations that much. It's not a circumstance where you can be a little bit cute about it, and let's say they have one guy that they pull out and put back in that you just match them up. Like Paul George and DeMar DeRozan, that's what the Pacers should have done with him in the playoffs last year. You can't do that with two or three guys on a team. Like, that's not the way the whole system works. And so some squads are probably just going to say, well, we just have to deal with it as best we can. And one huge difference in this game, though you don't want to read too much into it for a couple reasons, is that the defense looked a lot better with the starters in. And early on, though it wasn't as prevalent late, we saw that even a less engaged than playoff Durant can be incredibly useful as a help defender because of his crazy length.
Yeah, his length, his shot blocking is spectacular. He got credit for two blocks, but he changed a lot more shots than that. He was definitely a presence. I'm curious for your thoughts on what happened defensively tonight that we didn't see in the Toronto game, because it definitely looked like another level of intensity on defense. But did you pick up anything that was particularly frustrating the Clippers that the Warriors were able to do?
They were more active on the rotations, and you can switch a little bit more with the Clippers just because I think they were more comfortable with communication and everything like that. Also, playing in an arena where you're comfortable probably helps. You know, the idea of just that there's a lot less going on. And the other big factor in this, and it's a part of one of my big theories of basketball, is that they play better offense. And when you play better offense, you set yourself up defensively in better situations. It's part of the reason why teams should run against the Warriors every chance they get, because you want to get those easy buckets. But when a team is pulling the ball out of their own basket every single time, it's very hard for them to catch you off guard. And the Warriors' half-court defense is going to be good. It's probably not going to be as good as it was last year, because Petrulia to Bogut is a significant downgrade, except for the death lineup defense should actually be better in the playoffs, because, well, Barnes' floor and median in terms of defense is probably higher than Durant, just because it was such a big part of his role. His ceiling wasn't even close to Durant's, and we got a little glimpse of that tonight, but Warriors fans know that from the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, and I think that the reuniting of Durant with Ron Adams, just from sort of a narrative perspective, is interesting. There's the story from back in Oklahoma City when Durant was a young player, Adams was coaching him, and it was a Lakers-Thunder game where the Thunder decided to put Durant on Kobe when he was having a huge game. And Adams specifically was sort of coaching Durant on, okay, here's how you create space with Kobe, here's how you give him enough room, but then you can use your length to shut him down, to block his shots. And Durant sort of had this breakthrough moment where he gave Kobe fits for a quarter, for exactly the type of thing we saw tonight. He can give shooters enough room to make them feel comfortable, and then in an instant he's in their face shutting down their shot, just destroying a look that they thought was open. So putting aside the amazing stuff that he can do around the rim, which we saw last year in the playoffs. We saw a little bit tonight. Just as a versatile defender in the half court, he's going to be really hard for teams to deal with, I think, when he has the focus and the energy to play both ends of the court night in, night out.
Yeah, and it's also going to be fascinating to see how, and this is, of course, a long-term problem, not problem, it's a long-term thing to think about. So we've already discussed at length in this about the idea of how you deal with two or three of the best Warriors at a time, but when this team gets to the playoffs and all those guys are playing 40 minutes a night, how you deal with that is even harder because there isn't really a counter to any of that either. It's just that staggering it makes it hard to deal with all the time, but if it's 40 minutes, then you're not any better.
Yeah, that's one of my big themes for this season is delayed gratification. We're going to see glimpses like tonight, but my hope is that they arrive at the playoffs fully healthy, and I think that's when we're really going to see the true ceiling and the true scope of this team, when you are playing your best 8-9 players full minutes, when Kerr isn't sort of diving deep into the rotation in order to preserve guys. It's going to be really fun through the regular season, don't get me wrong, but we're really going to know the greatness of this team when they arrive at the playoffs and they put everybody out there in must-win situations.
And what makes it so different is that the team knows it too. Last year, the regular season mattered because they made it matter. This year, it matters in a loose sense. And how it all fits together in a crazy way is that the top of the West outside of them got weaker. Oklahoma City, because their best player got taken away. The Spurs, because one of their key players is retired. And the Clippers are a year older. You know, that's a team that has serious age-related regression. And while I don't read too much into tonight, that's just the truth with that team, is that by and large, they're going to be worse each year than the year before because Father Time is undefeated. And so that means the Warriors won't need to push in the regular season. And that, coupled with the fact that they're not defining their success in the regular season, means that there might not be as much to glean, even as they're doing very well, which I think we both expect.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of fun. They play with a lot of joy. So I think that that's going to continue through the regular season. And just on the fun factor alone, we'll probably make them a dominant team for extended stretches. But for the really kind of workmanlike, digging in, focusing basketball, I think they realize that they need to save something for the end of the year. Both Durant's experience last year in the playoffs against the Warriors, and then obviously the finals experience that the Warriors had, I think taught them that lesson. And we'll see the benefits of that education throughout the season.
So let's talk briefly about the bench. And at the moment, the most intriguing position battle, if you will, is Ian Clark and Patrick McCaw. What did you see from both of them today?
Encouraging signs from both of them. McCaw, I guess, has the most sort of pop just because he's come out of nowhere and he looks like such an improbable NBA player given his body build right now. The thing that blows me away about McCaw is that he's not moving like a rookie. He's moving like a veteran. He moves at the speed of the game. He's not hurried. He's in control of his body, and he's conscious of the angles of where he needs to be. His hoop intelligence is just obvious from watching him on the court for a couple minutes. Even when he was in there with complete scrubs, who he probably hasn't played that much with, given the practice time that they've had, he knows where to position himself, even when a set breaks down, to help reset things, to refocus the offense. Having a player like that is a bit like having an Iguodala out there, somebody who is a safety valve, who is going to make the right decisions, bring an intelligence to the play that really benefits the entire team. I think Kerr's going to love him. I think Kerr's going to find minutes for him in the rotation. If he can physically hold up to the stress of the NBA season, I think he's going to be a contributor. So I think that Bob Myers and the front office have to be thrilled that they were able to pluck a player with this potential out of the second round. His three-pointer looks consistent. He's got good form. He had a couple of nice shots again from behind the arc tonight. So the Warriors just have to be thrilled, I think, with his all-around game and the maturity that he's shown. Clark, we've seen before, so there's less of a wow factor, but you really want to see him do three things when he's on the floor. You need him to play some degree of point guard, so to bring the ball up and initiate the offense. He's looking better at that. He struggled at times last season. We probably won't know until he faces real pressure, but seems more comfortable in that role. And then you want him to shoot threes and penetrate. And he's doing both of those things well right now. I think that he's probably not going to be a big minute player, but as someone as, you know, a 5-10 minute a night guy regularly in the rotation, I think he offers them a nice package of skills and will help fill the role that Leandro Barbosa served to some degree last season.
Yeah, I can echo both that. And I like that you talked about McCaw more on the offensive end, because what struck me, and this is a huge difference between watching a game on TV and being there in person, is that you can keep an eye on this. And McCaw was often in when there weren't a lot of other guys I need to pay attention to. And his defensive reactions and adjustments were at a level that I've almost never seen from a perimeter player who was a rookie. He, at one point, just freelance helped on a pass that went into the interior and then was able to get out after two passes to get out to a shooter. And you never see a guy not only make the... That's an effort play, but it's also an intelligence play because he read it without anybody telling him to. To do that at his age is insane. Like, you don't see that very often, and he's thin from that frame, but I like that you mentioned Iguodala, because that is kind of the idea, is that he's intelligent. He doesn't have the brute athleticism. I was in college with Iguodala. I remember what he was then and what he was in his early years as a pro, but intelligence can take you a long way early on, and McCaw, if he can be kind of more of that complementary offensive player and not have to take the workload that Clark's going to do, that also theoretically gives them some space to play together, which is something that we'll probably see more in garbage time than in real action, at least early on, but is encouraging as you move forward, because one of the challenges with the Warriors is resilience, and, you know, how are they going to deal with injuries and various things. And so the more capable guys you have and the better they can play together, the more solutions you have in case the worst case happens.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that he's a nice bit of insurance, along with Clark, for keeping Sean Livingston's minutes down. Because if you sort of flow through the decision tree, if you're sitting Curry more and resting Curry more, which I think Kerr intends to do this season, you're going to need more minutes from Livingston. But we saw last year, particularly at the end of the season, when Livingston started playing high minutes, he lost something. It really sort of started to wear on him, I think, when he was pushing 30 minutes a night instead of 20 minutes a night. So having guys who can be two-way players, who can handle the ball a bit, who can make smart choices on offense, defend their position, you can never have too much depth in those areas. So the luxury of having somebody like McCaw, who seems to have all of those pieces, at least the raw materials for them, just a huge benefit, I think, for the Warriors' resiliency, like you said, going through the season.
Something that was shocking in person that I thought about a lot, but you really did notice it, was how different, excluding the holdovers, this group of centers is in terms of strengths, weaknesses, and everything compared to last year's group. There isn't an Andrew Bogut, there isn't a Festus Ezeli, but there are a lot of different guys with different strengths, and that's a challenge for Kerr, but it could also be something that excites him, because it's a new thing. It's a new challenge to figure out, okay, who worked with what, and there could be some limitations for maybe your upside, because that true defensive big was something that the Warriors used so well. But there are benefits to having West and Pachulia, particularly in the offensive end, that the team will be able to utilize.
Yeah, offense is really where I noticed it. There were possessions tonight where the guards were running the same sets that they would run last year with Bogut or with Festus, and they would get the center in a position to receive the ball and have an open look. But those two were so reluctant to go up with it or would struggle so much to catch it cleanly. The idea that they can now feed West and Pachulia, who are two offensively capable players, and make those things work, you almost saw them sort of realize that as the game went on and started working them more into their rotations and into the offense. I think that that's something that the training camp will really help them integrate fully. You can get West the ball in a lot of these opportunities. You can get Zaza the ball facing the basket, and he's going to know what to do with it. And that's something that the Warriors, in their modern form, this championship-level form, really haven't enjoyed. So I think you're absolutely right that Kerr's going to be able to do something with that. And the rest of the players, I think, will adapt to it as the season goes on to make it more productive.
Elliot Williams didn't play in this game. He's still dealing with his knee scope that happened earlier in the summer. But was of the kind of fringy guys at the bottom, was there anybody that stood out to you as a guy who, hey, maybe they should make this team?
I liked Pressey's effort. I'm not saying that he needs to make the team. I think he's undersized. But just as another point guard on this team, if you want depth there. You know, he showed some nice flashes tonight. He looks comfortable with the ball. I don't think he's going to make the team. I think that McGee will get the 15th spot. I think the real question in the minutes battle right now and at the edge of the roster is whether you really want to keep Varejao and McAdoo on this team. They seem redundant at sort of different ends of the spectrum, if that makes any sense. You know, they're both centers. McAdoo is probably improving. Varejao is probably ahead of him a little bit, but declining. But to waste two roster spots on somebody who's a marginal skill center, it seems like it may not be the best choice for the Warriors. So I know Kerr likes both of them for different reasons, but if they think they can get anything else out of another training camp player and maybe patch a couple more of the holes at the end of the bench in terms of the skill sets, I think they should give a hard look at it.
I agree with you. I think that they'll probably keep all the big men for emotional reasons and a lot of other stuff, maybe the exception of McGee. And JaVale has a lot to prove in these, about 3 weeks until that decision has to be made. And he needs to improve over that time, because what he has shown is that he still has the physical capability to be a player, but he doesn't always have the recognition. And there is a level of physical dominance that can work, even if you don't have it all there together mentally in terms of reaction and everything like that. And he's not all the way there yet. If he could get that in the next 3 weeks or get close enough that you feel comfortable with it, you have to put him on this team just because he can do something that none of their other big men can. He can block shots and he can rim run. But if you don't think you're getting that consistently enough, or you're getting too much downside to go with that upside, the numbers game really does add up. And it is part of, I mean, I don't need to go off on Anderson Varejao again, but it is part of the flaw of committing the roster spots in the way that they have, is that as long as the guys above them on the depth chart, meaning West and Petrulia, are doing well, you really don't need much in that. And so occupying space with those individuals because is a problem, because you only get 15. And they're kind of thin on the perimeter. And if the Warriors are playing as much garbage time as we think they might, you even want guys who can just sop up minutes at those spots. And they're going to be asking a lot from whatever smalls make the team just to make it work.
Yeah, I think you're going to end up playing more Iguodala in garbage time than you would want. You're going to end up playing more Livingston in garbage time than you would want. And if you don't add another wing to the team, you're going to have to, like you said, sop up those minutes with somebody, and it may not be in a way that is good for the long-term resiliency of the team. Getting back to McGee quickly, the thing that I was watching for tonight in person, he played all garbage time minutes, so it's hard to evaluate how he would do with starters or even the rotation players. But I wanted to see, did he look like he felt comfortable out there? Was he struggling to sort of be in the right position? Was he just freelancing the entire time? And while he didn't have a particularly great game, he at least looked like he understood where he needed to be within the offense. He wasn't wildly out of position. He wasn't just sort of drifting and floating the way that we've seen him done in the past, which was encouraging for me. It signaled that he's really focusing. He's trying to integrate what the Warriors are teaching him in camp. And Iguodala and others have always been willing to vouch for his intelligence. So if he's a smart guy, he should be able to get this. It's just a question of converting it into behavior out on the court. I agree that he's someone who has a lot to prove, but I think that they're at least encouraging signs so far, given what a huge need he fills for the team. If you give him the benefit of the doubt, I think he may be able to clear it by the end of training camp.
And something else that was notable in the pregame, Coach Kerr talked about, there was a question I think Tim Kawakami asked him about the centers, and he mentioned that, you know, some of those guys are going to need to play some power forward, and he mentioned specifically James Michael McAdoo, and we did see that a little bit in the late kind of garbage time of this game. And why that is important is because if Jones isn't healthy enough to, like, really be around the team, or they probably want to even just keep him in the D-League for a while, that spot of, if you think of McAdoo as a four, having somebody else who can play the five in those minutes, you know, that is a little bit more open, because Varejao, as crazy as it sounds, you know, that's another kind of reason why he's a man without a country on this team, is that you don't really want him as your garbage time center unless he wants to do that, because he's on the older side. You know, he's dealing with a back issue right now. So McAdoo and McGee can actually fit that role relatively well if they want to go on the bigger side. And since it doesn't really matter, it's garbage time, you can do that, especially if Kevon Looney is limited or hurt or whatever, you know, and sadly enough, that's happening with some frequency. I'm not saying it's a permanent thing, but that is another reason why there's an argument to have McGee at least at the beginning of the season while they're figuring all this out.
Yeah, I think if you were confident that Looney was going to be healthy and was going to be a contributor, it makes it a lot easier to walk away from either McAdoo or Varejao, particularly since I think one of Looney's strengths is his rebounding, whether he's playing at four or, you know, maybe even at three during times. He gives you sort of a nice combination of skills in that second unit to keep things going, whether it's garbage time or a couple spot minutes here or there. But without any confidence in Looney, your point about McAdoo playing the four and what Per thinks he could give the team, that's a necessary contribution. You need somebody there to fill those minutes, and McAdoo by default seems to be that person right now.
Anything else you want to make sure that you share about this ridiculous game?
Just the sense of awe, the sense of excitement. We can break it down for hours here, but I wasn't fully prepared, even with all the hype, for how this team was going to look. It was hard for me to wrap my head around it, not having seen a combination of this many great scorers before. So watching them in action, watching how effortless and how fun it was still thrilling and shocking, even with all the analytical time we pour into breaking down the nuts and bolts of how this happens. So it's just really fun to watch this team come together. They're just at the beginning of what hopefully will be a very long journey. So I'm excited to see what comes next.
Yeah, and when you think about what intelligent players, especially those who are thoughtful, do with time, is they figure out the places where their teammates succeed. And that's something that the Warriors have done, the holdovers have done with each other over time. They've had a long time to do it, actually. But that's going to be fascinating with Durant, because he's just so good. He's one of the most versatile scorers in the league now and arguably ever. You know, he's the best isolation guy in the league. He's great at catch and shoot. He's great at posting up. And so figuring all of that out with him, and him figuring that out for everyone else. And something we saw tonight, you can point to Durant's 7 assists if you want, but just watching the game, was that he is very receptive to that idea of passing and being a part of the offense. And a key aspect of the stagger concept was the idea of giving him a degree of continuity. But I'm coming more around to the idea of that not being as big of a factor. Maybe you want to do that just so we can get some shots and get in a rhythm, but it seems like he's more eagerly embracing being a part of this machine than I expected early on.
Yeah, I think he understands his role in it. I think he's welcoming the opportunity to be a creator for others. And it just looks like he's having fun. You know, they're out there playing basketball in a way that is so incredibly dominant. It would be hard not to just have the time of your life doing it. So I think he's smart enough, and the rest of his teammates are smart enough to know that if they buy into this system and they execute it, it's going to be something like nobody's seen before. And the opportunity to be part of that is just mind-blowing, and they seem to be ready for the opportunity and the challenge.
Well, thank you so much for taking time. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Adam Wardson for taking the time to come on. You can read him at Fast Break, the San Jose Mercury News Warriors fan blog, and you can also follow him at GSW Fast Break. GSW FASTBREAK. Yeah, there are a lot of things that you could talk about with that game. It is preseason. You want to couch everything in the idea that it was not reflective in certain ways, but there are takeaways that will be part of the best case scenarios for the Warriors on any given night, because they were absolutely dominant offensively and looked more together defensively than they have in the first game. And so that is notable in and of itself. It was great to really do kind of a gamer to have somebody on. And that is the hope for as many of these as I can do. And Adam is a great person to talk to about all of this sort of thing. I like his excitement, but also his measured perspective. And I love talking to him. I love reading his work, and you should absolutely do the same. If you have any input on the show, good, bad, or indifferent, you can reach out to me at Danny LaRue, DannyLeroux, on Twitter, or DannyLeroux, NBA@gmail.com. You can also follow the show at LockedOnDubs on Twitter, Locked On Warriors on Facebook or LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com. You can send stuff there if you prefer. Whatever works for you works for me. And I am going to start using that a little bit more, especially when we get into the little bit of a gap between the games. I hadn't realized, in all honesty, that Thursday's game is not televised. It's not going to be on TV at all. It's not going to be available in any way. So I'm actually probably going to go. And that's exciting. I live in the North Bay. It's a little bit of a trek, but that's all right. And so I don't know exactly how that's going to affect recording, just because I usually record after getting back, and so it'll depend on guests. But if it's a monologue, it'll just be when I get home, whenever that is. So that'll be that. And then going to have, of course, have a podcast between now and then. So there'll be a Thursday episode, which probably going to do some listener questions or something like that, just depending on what guest availability is during the day tomorrow. So looking forward to that already. Still a lot to decompress and to think about with this. And for those of you who want to see my work on this, I will have a piece on The Athletic at some point tomorrow, depending on when I get it finished and when it gets edited. And can also take a listen to both Real GM Radio and Dunked On. We've done Western Conference over-unders in the last couple days, so you can listen to those if you want for Warriors talk and pretty much everything else. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.